This is an Island to Island production. I'm Ollie Walker and you're listening to Ironcast, the show that brings you discussions with craftsmen, celebrities, denim heads, retailers, members of the internal and extended Ironheart family, and, well, sometimes people we just plain like. In this episode, we're talking to distinguished Ironheart Forum member and Airstream savant, Matt Rasper. We talk about OG Ironheart pieces, how to retire in your 40s, and Matt helps me prep for Hurricane Hillary. Spoiler alert, everyone ends up fine. Ironcast is an Island to Island production in association with High Kick Media, hosted and edited by me, Ollie Walker. You're listening to Ironcast.
You're listening to Ironcast.
You're listening to Ironcast, and I'm listening to Ironcast on horseback.
You heard Ironcast, the podcast from Ironheart.
Reporting from the West Coast, you're listening to Ironcast.
Evam Adrisara Vachanam Shrutavya.
You're listening to Ironcast, motherfucker.
Enjoy.
Hey, Kate.
Hold on, Ollie. Let me go grab her.
It's all good, man.
Kate?
We are just recording the Zoom whilst Matt gets tech support from his wife. We wait with bated breath. Matt, can you see me?
I can see you, yeah.
Oh, lovely stuff. I mean, not for you, obviously, but...
Hey! Oh, wait, there I am. Okay.
My mans.
Come on, Ava come.
Hi, Kate.
Ava, come.
He says hi.
She won't hear me
because
I'm wearing headphones. Can you turn that light on? And then, yeah, thank you. That's
you
better.
Do you need anything else, like snacks or anything?
I think I'm good. Thank you.
Come on, Ava. Ava, come.
Are we good?
This is very cool. This is very cool.
I know.
Look at us men being supported by our more capable wives.
Exactly. Yeah. Lord knows I can't do anything.
Dude, Sunday morning vibes. How do you feel?
Well, I'm an hour, I guess what, behind you. So I guess I got an hour on you. I got that one more cup of coffee.
Oh shit. Yeah. What? So you're 10:13 now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. What do they call that? Mountain time?
Yeah. It's mountain time. The time of the mountains.
It sounds like a made up time, doesn't it?
Yeah. Hey, are you in a hurricane zone?
So... Yes, yes.
So this call could be abruptly... I can see out your window behind you and there could be like stop signs flying by you and like small animals and stuff like that.
Yeah, and the podcast will end by me going, I don't think we're in canvas anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Just air raid sirens and...
Yeah, dude, it's all everyone could talk about yesterday. Like, I went to grab coffee and they were like, hey, are you prepped for the storm? I'm like, I mean...
I mean, what do I need? I've got my milk and my toilet paper. What else is there?
The essentials.
Because I'm lactose intolerant, so I've always got those two things in abundance.
And I plan on braving the storm out by sitting on the loo. So
just like everyone else. No, people on the East Coast, there's always those people who don't want to leave and they're like, I'm just going to stick around I've been through storms for 75 years. And then the next day it's like elderly couple dies in their home. Oh.
But I like how stoic they were. You know,
yeah.
I like that. I just think like rather than just be shitting yourself and battening down the hatches, I like that they go, I've survived before, I'll survive again.
Exactly.
What a way to go out.
Yeah.
So yeah, we are. It's raining. It's like torrential rain right now. But I don't know what to expect, dude. I don't know. Have you ever been in a tropical storm before?
Well, yeah, I'm from the East Coast. I've been in many. It rains, it's windy, the power goes out, the end.
So hang on, East Coast meaning Florida, like Southeast?
The entire East Coast is susceptible to hurricanes.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it just depends on the trajectory. Usually they'll come up from the Caribbean, and I mean, Florida and the Carolinas, places like that are common targets, but if it comes up along the ocean before it hits land, it can take a westerly turn at any point, and a lot of times it'll come in through the Mid-Atlantic or the Northern Atlantic, so... Anywhere along the coast can get it.
Oh, my goodness. I had no idea.
Yeah. Sometimes they come up through the south, go back out into the ocean, and then for whatever reason, they'll turn around and come back in. Yeah. Some places get hit twice. Some places, like, it'll come up, go back out, and then turn around and come right back in again.
Shit.
Yeah.
Damn. Well, there you go. I'm learning something.
Welcome to your new future.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Earthquake next month.
Exactly.
Well, I think, I don't know. I mean, who knows what to expect, dude? We've brought things in and we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Who knows?
Yeah, you'll be fine. Just stay away from the windows.
Stay away from the windows, which I found out yesterday are brand new. So there is that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're huge, expensive new windows or anything.
So whereabouts are you from? Where were you born?
Baltimore.
Baltimore?
Baltimore, Maryland, yeah. East Baltimore, Highland Town, to be precise.
I can only think of the podcast series Serial when I hear that. Baltimore, Maryland.
Yeah, that's Baltimore. And you know what? I think when that happened, I was kind of shut away in the police academy. I think it was like 99 or something like that. And so I didn't know anything that was going on. We were living there for 6 months. So anything that happened from August to December of 1999, I only know about secondhand.
Seriously?
Yeah.
You're in the police academy?
I was in the state police in Maryland.
I love learning this about you, Matt. This is the great thing. This is the great thing about someone like yourself, where you can just, we can just chat and I can learn. It's lovely.
Yeah, I'm a fountain of semi-interesting things, depending on who's listening.
Okay, so you were born there. You went into the force.
Uh-huh, yeah. I put all my eggs in that basket. That's what I wanted to do in college. So I have a double major in political science and criminal justice with a Spanish minor. Yeah.
Wow.
And I hated being a cop. I don't like politics very much, and my Spanish is total shit. So thank God I don't have any student loans left, or I'd really be hating paying those off every month. It's a waste. But I got in there and did that for 5 years, and I never really liked it. It was kind of a miserable job, you know. Nobody ever calls up the police and they're like, "Hey, man, what's up? You want to come over for a bar?" It's just all bad news all the time. And back in the 90s, it was, I mean, all the stuff that's coming to light now with, problems with the police is kind of, you know, I can see a lot of that stuff, you know. I can see a lot of the culture of police training and the culture of police forces and the, shoot now, justify it in front of a jury later kind of mentality that you see on the news. You can kind of see it firsthand. They a lot of companies, I mean, that's what it is. It's a company, it's a business. It has the same kind of productivity expectations and things like that, that any business would have. Except they do it without the benefit of any kind of professional leadership training whatsoever. You just do the job for 3 years and then you get your next rank. So it's all, OTJ leadership training, which, is great for some people, but for others, not so much. But it just wasn't for me. I mean, you could just tell by talking to me for 5 minutes that I'm not I'm not really meant to be, a state trooper. But I did it for 5 years. I toughed it out until I couldn't do it anymore. And that was, kind of the beginning of my realization that I just don't like working in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amen. Amen to that, brother.
Yeah. It's not my thing.
So hang on.
Figure something else out.
I mean, 5 years, it's quite a protracted time. I mean, was the realization, did it last the entirety of the 5 years, or was there a turning point where you went, "Ah, fuck this"?
Yeah, so that's the thing. I mean, I was pretty young. I was, 20, I had just turned, 23 when I went into the police academy. And the application process took years. So I started in 97 when I was still in college. I remember driving all the way. I went to college in Western Maryland, which was about 3 hours from Baltimore. And so I remember driving down there for, orientations and interviews and all that stuff. And the application process just takes a really long time. There are just so many different components to applying for like a state police agency, because it's very competitive. At the time there were 3,000 state troopers and 3,000 officers in the Baltimore City Police. So that gives you an idea of scope. They're stretched very thin. And I remember driving down there and just kind of getting into the application process and thinking to myself, I'm just going to stick this out. I'll come around. It'll be for me. And it just, I never got to that point where I felt like, yeah, this is where I belong.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Damn. So you come to the end of your, let's call it your tenure.
And that's difficult, you know, when you are making the transition from irresponsible student to adult on your own, you know, trying to make your own decisions and fend for yourself. And you're thinking to yourself, well, I mean, this is what I've been doing. Now I just can't. Yeah. First, you have to admit that you don't want to do it. You know, you have to tell your parents, you know, who are very proud of you. You have to tell yourself, you know, I don't want to do this. I've got this job. I need to figure something else out. And I mean, it's hard enough figuring that stuff out when you're a teenager, much less when you're getting older and older and you're thinking if it's either now or never. I don't, I ultimately came to the point where I just realized I don't want to do this anymore. I'm not happy. I'm not going to be happy. I need to figure something else out.
Fuck.
So I jumped ship unceremoniously.
Unceremoniously.
Yeah. I just, you know, gave my 2 weeks one day and said, yeah, I'm not going to do this anymore. And a lot of people, you know, kind of wash out, and you don't want to feel like you're one of those people who, you know, can't do it. That's a big feeling to kind of admit to yourself that that's not right for you, because you don't want to feel like a failure in a world like that, where, you know, you very much are made to feel like a failure if you don't, you know, proceed as anticipated, or if you don't climb the ranks or do whatever. So those are all very difficult, but I think that's part of growing up, you know, starting to come to terms with your own reality and admit to yourself that, you know, there are certain things that you can do and can't do, or want to do or don't want to do, and kind of humble yourself by realizing those things about yourself.
Right. So what was that like for you, the final days? And did you have an idea of where you wanted to go to next?
It happened in waves. It was something that I wanted to get out of so badly that I, like I said, I just jumped ship. I didn't have a plan or anything. I had a very vague idea of, well, you know, I like tweed blazers. Maybe I'll be a professor. Like, I didn't really have anything solid. So I just kind of, it happened in phases. There was the phase of hating my job, the phase of deciding I didn't want to do the job, then not doing the job. Then there was 2 months of being unemployed and going out drinking at lunch every day. And that was pretty fun, actually. That was pretty good. The credit card bills started to rack up into the, you know, hundreds to thousands to tens of thousands to, holy shit, I need to go find a job quickly.
Yeah, I need a job.
And I had a friend who was working in a call center at an insurance claim center. And he just said, you know, they are hiring, you know, why don't you come in? You can do this for a while you're, you know, trying to figure out what you want to do. I was thinking maybe I would go back to school for something, but I didn't have anything that I was really passionate about, which worked out to my benefit that I never went back, because if you're older and you're not passionate about something, you are not going to do well in an educational setting,
yes,
or, you know, about that thing. So I went in and I applied for the job, and they said, you know, everybody working in a call center is a little bit younger. They're, you know, it's not really a career-based professional area working in call centers. So the guy that interviewed me said, you know, you seem to be very personal. I can tell that you have a lot of customer service experience. You know, I think you're a little bit overqualified for this call center, but we're hiring in our claim center in the marine division doing boats. What do you know about boats? I'm just thinking to myself, man, boy, do I know so much about boats. And I don't know anything about boats.
Aye, captain.
but yeah, I mean, I've got a BA and BS. So I took it all the way. I was like, yeah, I can do this. So I got a job as a claims adjuster for marine claims.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was okay, but I never learned anything about boats, really. And the, that particular claim center was, you can kind of see the writing on the walls in some of those, you know, organizational environments. And this claim center seemed like it was kind of on its way out. So I applied for another adjuster position at a different insurance company. And I ended up working at that company, starting out as an adjuster and working my way up to manager. And I was there for about 16 years.
No way.
Yeah. And then kind of at the end of that is when I started to have, you know, I didn't start out hating that job. I actually liked that job.
Okay.
For a long time, until I didn't. Until I started to think that, this kind of organizational structure is not for me. I don't want to put this many hours and this much work into something I really don't believe in. And few people believe in insurance. It's not really, there's not a lot of people out there who, some people are very passionate about their job, but it's not the insurance part of it. It's the fact that, you know, they really like being in a leadership role, or they like being in a analytical role or a research role. But I didn't want any of that stuff. I started to develop kind of a anarchist, you know, down with companies, you know, down with organizational politics, you know. And then, I mean, I was at the end of my career, I was doing property insurance. That's kind of where I spent most of the time. So, I mean, it's something that you're going to have a lot of experience with very soon, I would imagine, when a fire hydrant comes through that window behind you. If you need any advice, let me know. I can walk you through.
Okay, good to know.
I can walk you through the insurance fraud process at any point.
Oh, excellent. We've got some power lines about 12 feet away. So, I anticipate
now.
Those.
Getting closer by the minute, I would think. but I actually enjoyed it. But as the climate kind of began to really, it became apparent that climate change was real. And it wasn't the kind of thing that, you know, before you could kind of put it off and say, oh, you know, when my kids have kids, things are going to be pretty bad. And it was like, no, every summer is a little bit worse. You know, every summer has a few more hurricanes. Every spring has a few more tornadoes. And you can't really, when you're in an environment like that, you can't hire people based off of the severity of one event. You have to hire people based off of the sustainability of, having those people when there are no events. So you can't do that. So when something comes through, you're completely overworked. You're working, you know, 12-hour days, 7 days a week for months at a time. And that really began to wear me down after a while, to the point where, you know, I was back in a similar position where I thought, you know, now I've got a wife and I've got kids and I can't do this anymore. And that was really protracted lack of work-life balance over time is ultimately what led me to, have a serious conversation with my wife about what the future is going to look like for us. And that's kind of where we are now.
Serious.
Yeah.
Wow. So how did that conversation go?
To her credit, it was all my wife's idea. And she is not like me at all. I mean, she is a, 15-year dedicated education professional. You know, she is an excellent teacher. She's super modest, but I mean, she's, you know, one of the smartest people I know. And every professional setting she walks into, she's immediately one of the smartest people in the room. And she's always been that way. So when I came home from work one day after being on, we call it cat duty, whenever there's a catastrophe that's designated as a catastrophe, you know, by the, you know, whatever, the National Weather Service or FEMA or whatever, it gets its own code, and then funds and resources are allocated to it. And the insurance industry is a big part of that. So whenever cat duty would come around, you know, you kind of have to steel yourself for being on call and working for extended periods of time. And I think this particular one was like an entire summer. Yeah, I think I made just like $35,000 in overtime in this 1 year, just because of all the extra hours and time I was putting in. And when you have little kids, that's tough, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad enough that you have like a single parent situation at home, but you know, you're also missing out on, you're not around on weekends. You can't, you know, you're not home in time for dinner. You're not hanging out with your family. There's absolutely no time for friends. I think I just came home from doing inspections or whatever I was doing one day. And, she could tell, and she said, "Why don't we quit our jobs?" I'm listening. Tell me more. You've got my attention now. And so we kind of just sat there and came up with a plan. And I was just shocked that she was the one who was suggesting this. And I mean, she is, I have like a, just kind of a historical bias against numbers, math in general. And so she's talking about finances, and I'm just like glazing over, like my eyes just kind of go big, and I just start losing interest in thinking about like Star Wars or something. And she said, "No, I think we can do this. I've been, you know, reading." She loves nonfiction. She just reads, you know, manuals and things, and she tries to tell me how interesting they are. And I'm like, "Oh yeah, that sounds super interesting." It doesn't. And she said, "Yeah, no, we're going to just front load all of our investment accounts. You know, we're going to max out our 401ks. We're going to open up IRAs, Roth IRAs, mutual funds, all these things that are, you know, relatively safe, but still aggressive enough to give us the kinds of returns we would need so that we can retire early." Mm-hmm. And it's a movement. I don't know what it stands for, but it's called the FIRE movement. FIRE stands for something. Basically what it is, you know, people retiring in their 30s and 40s. And so when I to kind of bring us back onto general theme, I got into Ironheart at about 2010, 2011. Mm-hmm. And if you want to talk about Ironheart at all throughout our Ironheart podcast, we can circle back to the
beginning. We'll come back to this.
There's a period of time where I kind of drop off the forum, like a very, very long period of time. And that was about the time that she and I decided, you know, we're not going to spend money. We're not going to go out to eat. If we take the kids to do anything, it's going to be, you know, like a park. It's going to be a museum. It's going to be something free. You know, if we want to buy something, we're going to write it down on a whiteboard and we're going to look at it for a week. And if we still want it at the end of the week, then we'll consider it. Mm-hmm. You know, really just micromanaging our budget and our expenses, and putting, at that point for 3 years, we were putting 75% of our income into investment accounts.
Wow.
And then we gave ourselves like a 5 year kind of, you know, in 5 years, I think we should be able to do this. And it sounded great, but once you know that you're going to do something like that, it every day becomes very, very difficult. You know, you're like, "Oh no, only 4 years and 360 days left before I can stop doing this job that I absolutely hate." But the time really flew. You know, we got into it. We turned the saving into kind of like our thing. And we were, you know, really impressed with saving things. And I mean, we got to the point, you know, about 3 years later where it was looking like it was going to become a reality. We kind of gave ourselves a hard deadline, and I'll be damned if we didn't retire early. It was, what was it, like 3 years ago or something?
Damn. How old are you now, Matt?
40. I'll be 47 next week.
Damn.
Yeah.
Retired at 44.
Yeah. And she always liked her job. So, you know, the plan was we're not just going to retire and sit around our house in Baltimore and, you know, just kind of be bored. And that's, you know, at that point, in the beginning, we knew we wanted to travel, and we thought it would probably be cheaper to not have a mortgage and to not, you know, do all this stuff. And let's buy an RV. In the beginning, we were going to buy a tiny house. Tiny houses were all the rage back then. Remember the TV shows and stuff. And that kind of, you know, morphed into what we ultimately did was sold all of our shit, including a lot of Ironheart pieces that I would have loved to get back. but we, you know, anything that's not going to fit in our mobile home is not going with us. And so we put the house on the market. We, you know, sold our cars. We bought a pickup truck. We found a really good pre-pandemic deal on a 30-foot Airstream. Used 30-foot Airstream. Because we knew that tiny houses look great. And if you're thinking like, "Oh, I really want to find something that can move around that I can live in," a tiny house is the way to go. until you realize the places you're going to be parking at probably don't actually accept tiny houses. And I was always terrified of the thought of like driving around with my house on my back like a turtle, thinking like, if I wreck, then my house is gone. So yeah, we settled on Airstream. And we just started doing these things that we had been talking about for years. And every day was just like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to look at an Airstream today. Oh my God, I can't believe, you know, half my house is in the backyard and on Facebook Marketplace, getting ready to go somewhere else. And then the pandemic kind of started and we were worried that that was going, cause we were going to leave in July. Things started to pop up in about, I think it was November. Was it November that people started to talk about it? Like the nursing homes in the Pacific Northwest. And
that sounds about right.
Yeah. So by February, you know, people were kind of thinking, I mean, should I wash my hands after I shake this person's hand? Like, you know, but then by March it was like,
that was it. Full blown. Know,
the world kind of fell apart. We bought that Airstream in April for a steal, because the guy who sold it was in a, this must go kind of situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we got that for a very good price, probably, you know, I think it was like maybe $1,000 or something over what he owed on it. And he was happy to sell it. When I ultimately sold it, when we got to where we are now, I sold it for like $20,000 over what we bought it for.
Oh my God.
Because everything, all recreational items post pandemic were through the roof.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember putting in my kind of 2 weeks at work and just being really excited that I wasn't going to be doing that anymore. On the day that I, like on my last day, that weekend, I went to the tattoo shop and got my knuckles tattooed. And I came home and I said to my wife, I am not going back.
Whoa. That's a thing, isn't it? It's a big thing in America. I hear like no government jobs, they say.
It's changing here a little bit. I mean, it's the pervasiveness of visible tattoos is such that a lot of jobs and companies, oh, and also the post-pandemic work from home situation here, is kind of making that a little bit more acceptable. But back then I was like, I'm going to get my forehead tattooed. Anything to not have to be in a position where I have to go back to this life again.
Right, right.
And we never had to. We are still, she loves to work. So she is doing that. She's kind of dedicated, you know, professionally and emotionally to her field, and she really loves it. And she should be because she's so good at it. And she's, you know, just starting to get out of the world of classroom teaching and into the world of, you know, being a consultant, like an educational consultant or something like things that are going to put her in the position to be able to work remotely full time and make a whole lot more money than a tenured teacher would make. So she loves it. Mm-hmm. And I love not working. So I just kind of try to be the primary parent. You know, I'm the name and the phone number at school in case they need something. And if the kids have a doctor's appointment or a dentist appointment, I do that. And I, you know, try to keep the house in order and I do all the grocery shopping and I don't mind at all. I'll do all that stuff.
That's sick,
as long as I don't have to go to an office and, you know, wear clothes that I don't want to wear and talk to people I don't want to talk to.
I love that.
Yeah.
Let me get a coffee refill and I want to ask you about the Airstream and I want to ask you about Ironheart. And I'm going to start by asking you about what things you had to sell to get this Airstream.
You don't want to know, Ollie.
All right, give me 2 seconds.
Sure.
All right, so are you at liberty to tell us how much you paid for your Airstream, or is that sensitive information?
No. I think it was, so it was a 2017 30-foot Flying Cloud. And the reason we got that one was because among all of the trim levels and all of the models, all the links, everything. So you're talking, you know, dozens of different models with different specs. This was the one and only one that had a bunk bed in it. And that's why we needed it. And one popped up we were in Maryland. Virginia is south of Maryland. And one popped up in Virginia. The price was right. The condition was right. The model, everything about it was right. And we weren't necessarily going to do it then, but it was there. And so we jumped on it. We drove down there. The guy wanted, I think, 67,000. I offered him 66. Mm-hmm. He said that was 1,000 over what he owed on it, and that was going to work. My father-in-law had a pickup truck. I did not. We towed it back to his house. I had never towed anything before, much less a 30-foot mobile home. Took it back there, parked it, and then I think a couple weeks later, we were out of our house, and we had sold that, moved to his place where we were basically going to stage, you know, get the thing ready, get to know it, you know, learn how everything works, start fixing the problems that inevitably popped up when you buy a used mobile home. Mm-hmm. I went and bought a Ford F-250, which is a lot of truck for a person who is not typically driving trucks and towing things.
It's a lot of truck, yeah.
Yeah, but we were doing this stuff and we were just kind of like, we're doing these things because we know that these are the things we need to do right now. We're kind of on autopilot, but you know, every morning we wake up and say, did we buy a 30-foot Airstream yesterday? Like, did that happen? Is there a giant truck in the yard right now? Is that ours? Are we leaving in 3 weeks to not just to, you know, travel full time and not have any ties to any place? We became Texas residents because Texas has the least requirements for homeschooling in the country.
Wow.
So you don't have to. I mean, we could have done. I mean, obviously, the thought was Katie is a professional teacher. She will be able to teach our children anything they need to know at the ages of, you know, whatever they were 3 years ago, only to later learn that the worst student a person can have is their own children.
Oh, my God.
It was like she had like the sweat hogs from Welcome Back, Kotter. Like they were the worst students ever. It was
terrible.
There's
no boundaries.
Man.
There's boundaries. Nothing.
No, they were just like rolling around on the floor and crying and screaming. I'm like, what kind of class is this?
Yes.
It's like the D team, like the class that all the other kids look at. And they're like, no, don't go talk to those guys. They're the ones who get suspended every week.
Dude, my mom was a hairdresser. And when I was a kid, she would cut my hair, but the way she did it to me...
I think she went a little short.
she went in, but the way she would do it, I'd be in tears. I'd be crying. Because it was just like, move around, turn around. You know,
that's
hair
how
in
it
eyes.
Is for me. No, that's how it is for me. Because now I'm a barber. And my kids have... I mean, they're not, you know, going to the salon. I'm not going to drop $100 on my kid's hair, so I'm going to do it. No, it's like I'm trying to cut their hair with, you know... Mm-hmm. Branding irons or something.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the worst thing. It is the worst thing.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
But the same with teaching. Sense. So 66 or whatever is what we paid for the Airstream. Worth every penny. When we finally got here, I'll circle back on that, but where we are now, we needed to sell it. And we found a buyer in Illinois and we're in New Mexico, but we had to go back to Maryland anyway. Because before, we knew we weren't going to keep the pickup truck because the payments were high, the gas is high, the insurance is high. We aren't pickup truck people, unlike 90% of the Albuquerque, New Mexican population. And so when we told people we were selling, they're like, what? I don't understand. You're getting rid of your pickup truck? So they flew back to Maryland before we moved here. And I drove the pickup truck back to Maryland, towed the Airstream to Illinois, sold it for a ridiculous price. Drove the rest away to the Maryland and, you know, put everything in the back of that pickup truck that we had left, brought it back here. And here we are in Albuquerque now. So I'll back up a little bit and we can talk about the trip itself at length if you have any specific questions. But to fast forward a little bit, at about the end of the year, the kids really kind of got burnt out from traveling. They started to make all the things that we had dreamed about doing not fun. You know, it's kind of when you're dreading going on a hike at Joshua Tree because you know the kids are going to melt down the minute you step foot on the trail, and that becomes kind of a daily thing, then we had to seriously question whether staying out there on the road, stretching our expenses because we're not working, we're not making any money, we're only spending it. You know, do we really want to dig that far into our savings, you know, kind of post-retirement while we're so young? You know, it's not like that savings was going to last us another 30 years.
Right.
So that's when we started to have a conversation about, you know, maybe we should find a home base, wait until the kids are a little bit older, see if they want to travel. Again, if so, we'll get back out and do it again. If not, maybe we'll wait until they, you know, get a little older and move out. And then maybe, you know, you and I will just do it together. So we had a couple contingencies in place so that we didn't have to totally give up on the master plan. We were in Arizona at the time, and I was in bed recovering from a kidney stone attack, which is something you don't want to have in the middle of nowhere, Arizona, while living in a 30-foot trailer.
Yes.
We found a house in a suburb of Albuquerque. It had the good combination of affordable cost of living and good weather that we wanted, which is something you really can't find. I mean, you know, you're in a place that has good weather, but awful cost of living.
Yes.
You know, the places with the best weather usually have the most expensive homes. But New Mexico is still extremely reasonable. Mm. And so we contacted a realtor on like some neighborhood chat group or something, like a mommy's group or something on Facebook, hooked up with her, had her go do a Zoom walkthrough at a house, put in a cash offer on it. And it was accepted immediately. And
wow.
So that's where we are now. It's where we've been for the past two-ish years.
Wow.
Yeah.
New Mexico is, it's pretty, I mean, I've not obviously done a huge amount of New Mexico. I've done Santa Fe,
which I most guess, people in New Mexico will tell you is not even New Mexico.
Yeah. I was fearing you were going to say that.
Yeah.
But whatever. I loved it. It was epic.
It's still
nice.
I
was there in November and it was freezing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the elevation there's a little bit higher than where I'm at in Albuquerque. So, there's usually about a 10 degree difference between there and here. So that's what I like about it because I'm not a hot weather person. And after this current summer that we've had, I mean, last summer here, I don't think the temperature topped out in the mid 90s with no humidity whatsoever. So as hot as it was, if you walked under a tree or if a cloud went over the sun, it was immediately manageable. Which is nice for someone like me who's from the East Coast where it's, you know, August is 100 degrees with 95% humidity and it's unbearable all the time, every day, morning to night. Here, as soon the minute the sun goes down, I mean, you're in the backyard loving life, no matter how hot it was that day. So the weather's pretty great here, but I mean, we're antsy. The travel bug is what we have. So we're already planning the next steps. I think maybe 2 years left here at the most before we move on to the next thing, whatever. We've got some options, but kind of like the beginning stages of the last plan, you know, this one's kind of shifting and morphing and moving around a little bit. We don't have it nailed down yet, but Katie left the classroom and is in a position now that will enable her to make a lot more money working remotely full time. And that's going to open up the possibilities for what we do, you know, 2 years from now or whatever. And then I have no delusions of grandeur. You know, I don't have any problem taking the back seat in the breadwinning department. As long as I get my Ironheart allowance, my boot allowance, my sneaker allowance, as long as I've got those things, I'll whatever. I don't mind, you know, I'm not macho to the point where I feel like I need to be making a bunch of money and have to be, no, I don't need any of that. I just need
That's
to.
That's awesome to hear, dude.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, speaking of the traveling thing, it was great to see you last year. Great to meet you in person at the Ironheart anniversary.
How amazing was that party?
Dude, that was sick.
It was great.
That was sick. I was very hungover though.
I was jet lagged and hungover. I was, I mean, but you know what? The adrenaline of being in that place with all of those people. You know, that's the amazing thing about Ironheart is some of those people, I mean, all of those people I had physically met for the first time, but some of those people I've known for, you know, 12 years, you know, some of those people were, I mean, I would say that my friends from the forum are definitely some of the best friends that I have, the people that I care about the most, the people that I have the most in common with. Going into that situation was zero anxiety, zero nerves, just kind of like, hey, great, we're here. And I loved every minute of it, man. I couldn't get enough.
Yeah, it was good to see you guys, dude. You guys were on top form, although we did let you down with Yell, the tattooer.
That's okay, man. That's okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to win that raffle this year, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For those listening that don't know what you're talking about, can you explain the raffle?
Yeah. So, well, let me start off by saying never in a million years did I think that when I said, hey, Kate, what do you think about going to England for a pants party in September? You know, most people would expect their wife's reaction to be like, what? Are you tripping, girl? Like, what are you talking about? She was on board from the start of it, man.
Sick.
At which, you know, she is a professional panty pincher. She doesn't like to go shopping for herself. You know, she's very budget driven. And she was like, no, yeah, I'll get my dad to come out and stay with the kids for a week. You know, we'll get a credit card, like a travel card or something that's got really good points, and we'll start putting everything on that, and we'll use that to buy our plane tickets and our hotel stay, and yeah, let's go do it. Mm-hmm. I was so pumped, man. Mm-hmm. So little did I know that when I said it again, kind of mostly joking, like, hey, next year's party is going to be in Germany. Let's go there. She's like, yeah, we got to go.
What?
Yeah, that didn't have to do any kind of convincing or arm twisting. So yeah, in 2 weeks, we'll be heading to Hamburg, to Ironheart, Germany, for the 21st anniversary party, where you won't be. Mm-hmm. That's kind of sad. It's kind of sad. But no, it's fine. I don't care.
I don't care.
Right. No, but yeah, so same situation. Father-in-law is going to come out, stay with the kids for a week. They'll eat, you know, cereal and gummy bears for a week, and we'll come back, and they'll be completely crazy, but we'll have had such a good time. But yeah, Hamburg 23. It's going to be off the chain.
Unfortunately, this episode is going to go out after that. We've decided to stack the season this year, and we're just going to start launching it week by week.
Okay.
It will have already happened by the time this goes out. So, how was it, Matt?
I can't even say. There's so many NDAs that were signed in an attempt to preserve the brand's name and the and some legal situations for some of the party goers.
There you go.
So it's tough to really get into detail, but it was epic. I'll tell you that much.
Well, I look forward to seeing all the photos. Right, so I'm going to bring you back to post coffee break. Now, you said you had to sell a lot of pieces to fund this Airstream.
Yeah.
Talk me through the despair.
Well, let's start at the top. I would think most people listening to this podcast know Ironheart fairly well, and they know that the Ironheart shirt 87 is a top coveted grail item. And I got mine when it came out, and I sold mine before we moved for
those listening that don't know the 87, can you describe it?
It's a beautiful ultra heavy flannel, a beautiful 12 ounce ultra heavy flannel, kind of like a black base with white, red, gray lines on the plaid. It's a very deep, like crimson red, which really hit well with the black and the gray stripes. Just a black and red plaid flannel that everyone loves, always have. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like a sleeper hit. Like it was pretty hot the minute it came out on the website. And to this day, you know, every once in a while, someone will pop up wearing one and, you know, the forum will go crazy. Man, check out that 87. I don't even remember who I sold mine to, but I hope they're still wearing it in good health. If they ever want to sell it back, they know where to find me. But I mean, I got rid of a pair of the double indigo selvage duck loom breakers, one of a kind, broke the loom. You'll never see them again. Got rid of those. All my t-shirts, all my Ironheart t-shirts. I had some classics.
No.
Yeah. But I thought, you know, these very expensive t-shirts are going to do me a lot more good in the form of cash when I hit the road, because when I go to a show, I get a t-shirt, you know, when I go to a brewery, I get a t-shirt. I've just got more t-shirts than I can wear in a year. So I was like, I can actually sell t-shirts and make money off of them. So these have to go. That was absolute foolishness.
but forgivable foolishness.
That's debatable, Ali. That is absolutely. That's 100% debatable, man. I don't forgive myself. I mean, that's all that matters, I guess, at the end of the day. Yeah, the duck work pants. They used to have all different colors of duck work pants. I had some in khaki that were really nice. I got rid of those. They only have brown duck now anymore. All kinds of stuff, man.
Mm. There's such a there's something about those archive pieces, you know. It's you know, I spoke about this with Giles a while back. He may not remember, but it's, you know, the argument is, do you bring back those OG pieces and then devalue the OG pieces themselves, or do you just bring them back because they were so good? Like, where do you sit with that?
I don't think there's a right answer. I think it depends on who you ask. I mean, I've got a 64, the sweater Western. It's the Western made out of sweatshirt material. That's another big piece. And whenever I read something about them talking about potentially bringing it back, I think, no, why would you do that? I've got one, and that makes me better than them. Don't bring it back. Don't do that to me. It's all I have. I don't have much. I'm not better than many people, but I'm better than people who want this and don't have it.
But then I'll always have that.
At the same time, there are things that I don't have that I'd love to have, and I think, oh man, bring that back. It really is just all about me.
it's just I don't care if you want it, you know.
I don't care about anybody else. Just let me have what I want.
There's when I moved to the States, I had to sell probably 80% of my shit as well, dude.
Just, that kind of thing. Because you can't, yeah. I mean, I couldn't, I was in a situation where I didn't want to have all these, you know, very high value, very nice, expensive things sitting in a closet somewhere because I couldn't fit them in my Airstream closet, you know?
Yeah.
So I had to consider not only, you know, what do I have here that maybe doesn't get that much wear that I could move along, make a little cash, take it on the road with us, and not have to worry about it fitting, you know, under the bed or in the little five shirt closet that is on my side of the bed or whatever. And so, like you said, traveling was a big part of it. Yeah. It just couldn't come with me.
It's just that it's load, and it's you also have to free up, as you said, you have to free up finances. You know, yeah. When I got here, I had to, you know, down payment on a house in LA. I mean, obviously we didn't buy
it. And you're living in Los Angeles. You're not going to need, like, you know, an M65 coat, you know, those kinds of things
jacket.
I had to consider, you know? Yeah, exactly.
No, you're exactly right, dude. I mean, maybe the winter in the evening, it gets a bit chilly, but yeah.
Does it get chilly enough to have to wear an $800 coat? Like, is it that kind of chilly? Or can you, maybe we'll put on a sweater?
Dude, honestly, the truth is I have an Indigo Ferrer Wes Lang blanket that lives around my shoulders as soon as I'm outside and it's cold. That's my favorite thing.
You're just an adorable little old lady.
Right?
You're just a little old lady out there
drinking
your tea and watching the sunset with your very, very fancy blanket around your shoulders.
But that's it. That's all I need, my blanket.
Oh, yeah. Man, I think Indigo Ferrer makes like a poncho that I want. And whenever I mention it to Katie, she's like, no, I got to draw the line somewhere. And poncho is that line.
And it's there.
Yeah. But come on, man. Serves so many purposes, like a blanket that you wear.
But dude, it's funny, isn't it? Like if you were wearing, let's say something monumental in your life happened and you were wearing whatever, like a Hanes tee, you'd throw that fucking thing away. But
oh, yeah.
When my daughter was born, I was wearing the red Chambray Mock Twist work shirt. So I can't sell that now. Like I helped my daughter wearing that shirt. It's done. It's like, that's it. That's in history books now for me. Yeah. It's funny, but like Ironheart has that status. It becomes like, oh, I did that when that happened.
Right.
So that can't be sold. I mean, do you have anything like that?
Most of my stuff I've got. So when my first daughter was born, and she'll be 12 in October, this was pre-Ironheart for me. Mm-hmm. So I think the week before Katie went into labor, I ordered my first Ironheart item, which was a pair of the 666 25-ounce denim.
Oh.
And I think it had
just... You didn't fuck about.
No. I went all in. At that point, I had some things that were not quite Ironheart. You know, I think I was wearing a pair of Left Field New York selvedge jeans, mm-hmm. which were cool. I liked them. But I thought, you know, I've put in the time, I've done the research, you know, I've sat in the bathtub in 501 shrink to fit, you know, I've done the things that all beginners have to do. But now it's time to move on. So, you know, I started doing the research of, you know, what's the best out there. If I'm going to spend money on something, then I want the absolute best thing there is. I don't want anything lesser than. And then in my opinion, with all the online research that I did, Ironheart was the way to go. And I was trying to figure out what the right fit was for me, what the right, you know, the right weight was. I think 25 had just kind of come out at that time. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I went with. And I ordered it, you know, obviously not knowing that my wife was going to go into labor the next day. So when she was, you know, we were at the hospital giving birth to that first baby. At the time, the bags were blue. They're green now, but at the time they were blue. The blue bag was on my doorstep waiting for me. And I'm just like, you know, looking at my phone or whatever, thinking like, oh, man, we've got this new baby. That's great, but I got to go home. There's really nice pants waiting for me. I'm so excited about these pants. My wife's like, but look at this baby. I'm like, yeah, that baby is great. But I you don't understand.
But however,
I've got really nice pants on the doorstep. Anything could be, it could be raining on them. There could be prowlers in the area. You know, anything could happen. There could be a raccoon.
Ironheart prowlers.
If I go home and a raccoon is wearing 25-ounce pants, then I'm going to be so mad at you for having this damn baby. But while we were there, having the baby, I was wearing those left field jeans. And when the baby comes out, as you know, without getting too graphic, anyone here who has a baby and has been in the room with the delivery, it's kind of a messy affair. It's not like, you know, there's flowers blooming and like sunshine is coming in through the window. Like, you know, everyone's happy and smiling and holding a baby. No, it's like, you know, it's like a house of a thousand corpses. You know, things are happening in there that you didn't think you were going to have to see and immediately try to put out of your head. And those things happened on my left field jeans.
Wow.
But it was very early in my career. So did I wash them when I got home? Nah. Spot treated those jeans, man. Even though they had all kinds of disgustingness on them. I was like, no, I can't put them in the wash. I'm not at the 6-month point. I can't do that. I'm only like 3 months into these. I can't wash them. What are you, crazy? I'll put them in the freezer. I'll do an ocean bath. So, those, back to your original question, are there any things that had a special memory? Those jeans that I don't wear anymore. They have figurative and literal pieces of my childbirth experience on them. Can't get rid of them. And the 25-ounce that I actually did sell. Because the great thing about finding happiness in life is that you almost immediately start to lose weight. So those don't fit. So I re-loved those. I sent those back to Gosport to be handed off to someone else who could get use out of them because they just weren't the right size for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that 25-ounce is a lot.
I don't have any right now. It's kind of on... I got so many pants that the ones I want just have to take a back seat to the ones that I have and should be wearing.
Yeah, exactly. The last conversation I had was with Brian Sabo of Indigo Invitational. And it was just that classic thing of like, yeah, it's a bit more work, but the payoff's better with a 25-ounce. And it's true. You just have to just knuckle down for a little bit longer.
Just a worn pair of 25-ounce. There's nothing like it.
No.
They look great. Incredible. Yeah, they look great. They feel great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'll do it at some point. I just don't... when I'm not living in LA...
Yeah, I think, you know, you always see those self-edge guys doing it. But, you know, if they're up in Oakland or San Francisco or something, maybe. I don't know about LA. I don't think that would be enjoyable. I mean, maybe, some people do it, man. I mean, if they can do it out in, you know, Southeast Asia, then surely. Can do it in Los Angeles.
Yeah, but I'm not built for these climates, Matt. I'm built for England. I'm a freaking white English fool.
Just pasty and delicate.
Pasty, yeah. Hot when it gets... you know, 60 degrees.
I don't enjoy the heat either. So, but I do manage to wear some jeans in the summertime. I'm not all shorts all the time. I don't really like shorts as much as jeans. So I value those. I value the weather based on how it can afford me the ability to wear my Ironheart.
Yeah.
You know?
And it seems like a platitude now, but the 21-ounce really is wearable in the heat. You know, it's so breathable.
Yeah, it is. And they make, 14, 15, 16, 17, you know, anywhere in between.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so you managed to sell some things. So they were the kind of grail pieces. Mm-hmm. So any other honorable mentions to the those we've lost?
I'm sure there is. Oh, you know what I had? They made a hickory stripe work shirt with snaps. And it was a great shirt. I loved it. But I thought to myself, oh, there was a different hickory stripe shirt coming out that I was very much interested in. My hickory stripe work shirt, the Ironheart shirt 91, had an upside down Ironheart patch, the little one that's on the pocket. Mine was upside down.
No.
Yeah. So it was like, oh, this one's special. I mean, it looks right to me when I look down at it, but everybody else doesn't understand that it's upside down. And I always loved it. And I thought, I'm going to get this other one. So I'm going to sell this one. So I sold it to a forum friend, a dedicated forum member, who I'm sure is still wearing it and loving it. But now I look back and I think, oh man, I had that one shirt that had the upside down patch. I really wish I hadn't gotten rid of it. It's kind of special. It was a really cool shirt. But so yeah, there's really nothing that I've gotten rid of that I thought, you know, I don't miss that. You know, I didn't get something just on a whim and think I shouldn't have gotten this. Like everything that I've ever sold is something that I still wish I had, but have had to come to terms with letting it go so that I could make room for something else.
Yeah. Have you heard of this? I mean, I don't know if there's a series on Netflix, but I follow them on Instagram. They're called the Minimalists.
Minimalists? You mean people who minimize? That sounds ridiculous, Ali. Why would you talk about such heresy on this podcast? That's stupid of you.
But it's interesting. I mean, other than the fact that I find the dude, I mean, I probably shouldn't say this publicly, I find him a little annoying because he gets on and he talks like this. And
Jesus,
basically,
Ali? That guy's probably listening. Right?
He's probably listening, isn't he? He loves
Ali. Now Ali has beef with the Minimalist. That's the headline.
All right.
You're going to edit this out because you're not going to go on air on an award-winning podcast and talk shit about the guy from the Minimalist.
No, of course I'm not. Of course I'm not. He's not annoying. He's great.
Yeah, I love him.
But seriously, he says some fucking great stuff, and it's just kind of giving you the idea of, you know, hoarding and everything else that we do, and it's a good, and it helps. I mean, I'm not subscribing to it fully, let's be honest, but there's some good nuggets in there. So if anyone's interested in, reducing their
quality over quantity, is a really nice unproven theory that Ironheart addicts will tell to their significant others to help convince them that they need to buy the things that they want. Like, sweetheart, I need these $400 jeans because they are, you know, they're made sustainably. The Ironheart is really great to their employees. They care about the environment. I'm going to have these jeans for so long. It'll be like I had normal jeans for the same period of time because I would have had to replace them. And you end up saying that like at least 2 times a month, every month for the foreseeable future, because that's really just it's just something that we say to try to convince our loved ones that it's worth the purchase when really we just want every single thing that goes on sale.
I mean, it's a fallacy, Ali. Yeah.
It's not real.
Nothing but love for our boy, Adam Goldberg. He is one of my favorite human beings. We talk frequently, but his inflow versus outflow is mental. And I will say this to his face or in his DMs, but he buys, sells. It's like in, out, in, out, in, out. I mean, I don't know how he rationalizes that or manages to explain that to his partner.
You know, I kind of get it because, I mean, like right now, how many pairs of jeans do I have? Like 7 pairs of jeans? I can't wear 7 pairs of jeans.
Yeah.
Like
there's
some things that I own that, you know, I look at them and think to myself, I honestly can't remember the last time I wore that, but it's awesome. You know, it's beautiful. I love to look at it. I love to touch it. I love to wear it. I love to write songs about it. And there comes a point where you're like, yeah, but there's something coming out next week that is also currently making me feel that way. And I need to make room for it so that thing's got this other thing is on the list of things that has to go. Because it's really, there are things that I buy that when I get them, I'm not nearly as excited about them as I was when I was in the process of buying it.
Right.
Like that is it's an addiction thing. It's definitely triggering, you know, parts of your brain that it's not like, you know, some items that I own are, you know, practical things that I wear all the time and that serve me a purpose, and it's very utilitarian. And some things I just love the thought of them, and the act of buying it was something that, you know, triggered the pleasure sensors in my brain and made me feel a certain way. So that kind of in and out flow I totally get.
Yeah. But it's addictive, as you say.
Yeah.
I'm currently, I mean, by the time I hope no one buys this because I'm saving up for it at the moment. But Ironheart are doing a sheepskin. Well, let's say we are doing a sheepskin Type 3 at the moment, and it's like £1,500.
Yeah,
but it's gorgeous.
I know,
dude.
I do have. Yeah, I'm not in the market for any of the $1,000 plus items. Those things, while are beautiful and I'm sure would become valuable parts of my collection, that the sticker shock is just too much for my wife and me to bear.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were left to my own devices, I'd be homeless with an incredible wardrobe. All the credit cards would be maxed out. It would be one of those situations where, like, you know, a couple gets divorced because one of the parties, secretly blew the entire life savings on, you know, like gambling or whatever, like horse racing, you know, that would be me.
Yeah.
If we didn't have some rules in place about, you know, how I save money and what I can and can't get. And, you know, buying a $1,500 jacket is one thing. Wearing that $1,500 jacket in front of your wife for the first time is something else. And so things like that aren't going to happen for me. I try to keep it. Everything I buy is kind of dependent upon how I think it's going to affect my marriage.
Well, yes.
Yeah. Like, yes. Is this going to be a divorce piece? If not, I can figure out a way.
Okay. So we keep it under $400 then when we do spend.
Well, I don't know, man, because now they've got all these like pay and for platforms.
Oh, no. Affirm. And
yeah, all that stuff. And it's like,
brutal, isn't it?
There's no, I'm like, well, I mean, yeah, $400 for something is a lot of money, but $100 every 2 weeks, that sounds very reasonable. That sounds like a bargain. I can hide that way easier than $400.
Way easier.
Yeah. So yeah, those things are killer, but yeah. I haven't affected the bottom line adversely yet. So
That's good. Let's try and stick with that.
I've got these headphones on and I can't really gauge the volume of my voice within my house. So I have to be careful of how loud I say things like this, because I don't want certain things becoming public knowledge in my home. Like,
Let's keep it between us. I mean, although she may listen to the podcast anyway.
There's a chance of that. No, she's not interested. If it's not like she's like, you were saying you really enjoy that Netflix show about the minimalist. That's exactly the kind of thing that she likes. She likes watching shows about, you know, self-improvement.
Yep.
You know, the extreme makeover weight loss thing she'll watch. Mm-hmm. Like anything about, you know, Marie Kondo, tidying up, organization. Like she likes stuff like that. The kinds of books she reads, it's all stuff like that. That and people who are hoarding. I don't understand why she enjoys that.
She enjoys hearing about people who hoard.
She loves those shows, man, about people hoarding. And I'm like, that's disgusting. I told you I was an insurance adjuster for property claims. So I would frequently go into these houses, and we weren't ever allowed to say the word hoarding, because hoarding is a medical diagnosis. So as a non-medical professional, you cannot say, I'm not covering your claim because you're a hoarder. You have to say, I'm not covering your claim because you have neglected your personal property to the point
you have an abundance of shit.
Exactly. So I can't ever, but I've been in places where you couldn't walk through the stuff. You had to walk on top of the stuff. Someone had a water loss in their basement because they had a ground level window that was broken. And so every time it rained, the water would go into the window and just flood out their basement. So I know that this type of thing isn't going to be covered. This is a water loss that occurred over time. It's not something that happened, you know, immediately, like a hurricane that's about to affect you. And so I knew that this was something that probably wasn't going to have any coverage for it. But I needed to go down there and look anyway. And I asked the homeowner if I could go look at the basement. And he said, well, I don't know. It kind of smells like rat urine.
Ooh.
And I'm like, wow. Why does it, is it because he's like, yeah, there's a lot of rats down there and they're urinating everywhere. So that's what it smells like. I'm like, okay, we'll pass on the inspection. I'll just assume that I know what it looks like down there and we'll move forward. So I have no desire to watch these things on television. They don't interest me at all.
No.
You know, it's like when you're a police officer, you don't slow down when there's an accident on the side of the road. You try to get out of there before the traffic backs up.
Yeah, I mean, I do that anyway.
Yeah, you don't have any interest in seeing the misery and suffering of others. You've seen enough of it, so you can just keep driving.
Dude, did you see that video that was circulating the socials the other day about the guy in Germany who was just going, move on, like shouting at people for filming, like, you're disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's death here. What are you filming? What are you trying to see?
Yeah. Let me record this for posterity instead of trying to perform CPR. Surely my role in this will be valuable to someone. And so I don't need to worry about the actual preservation of human life. That Heimlich maneuver, not so good at that. But I can get the camera out on my iPhone super quick. So I'm going to help. I'm going to help in any way
Yeah, I'm going to help there. Yeah. So does that mean that... So are you and your wife kind of polar opposites in that respect? Are you more into your fantasy fiction thing than your practical...
My fantasy fiction...
Well, you know what I mean? Like TV shows.
Oh, I thought you meant like
my... Oh, sorry, I did. That was a
my OnlyFans page is what you were talking about.
Which we'll plug at the end, but...
Right. My Lord of the Rings fan fiction OnlyFans that I have.
Your cosplay.
My Hobbit foot fetish page that I have.
I did a swerve back to what she watches.
She and I get along so well. We don't have, we don't have big blow... The only thing we ever argue about is money, ever. And we have learned to talk to each other about it in a way that kind of keeps those kinds of intense conversations to a minimum. But I mean, the only thing we really have in common is that we just love each other so much, you know, but that's good because if she liked all the same things that I would like, I don't think I would be as interested in talking to her because we're sharing with each other things that the other person doesn't really know that much about. And instead of thinking, oh, what you're talking about is boring, it's, you know, it's kind of interesting. We have different perspectives that we share with each other because we think differently. We balance each other. You know, she doesn't like to spend money, but she knows she should, you know, she knows she works really hard and that she deserves to, you know, reap the benefits of that hard work every once in a while. She should get, you know, she should go spend a lot of money on her hair, or she should get a massage, or, you know, we should do a vacation somewhere. She knows she should do those things. And I know that I should not buy, you know, my 10th, you know, good art bracelet in a month because that's not good for our family. So we definitely balance each other out, and we keep each other kind of, you know, grounded in the way that we need to be individually.
I love that, dude.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, Matt, I'm going to have to wrap up very soon, but I wanted to bring everyone to you on the forum. So if anyone wants to reach out to you, what's your handle on the forum?
This one's going to blow you away. It's Matt.
Oh, fuck.
I know, right?
Damn, man.
It's old school. It's old school.
Yeah.
You had to be in kind of early to get the first name locked in. Oh. Yeah.
And have you got one of the characters from The Watchmen as your avatar?
Actually,
am I tripping?
It's Dr. Manhattan, but with my face superimposed on it.
Excellent.
Who was that? It might have been SKT. I can't remember. Somebody did that after I made a comment about something, and I can't remember what it was, but then that kind of popped up as a little photo edit, and I immediately just changed it over to my avatar because I thought it was genius. And up until that point, I didn't use that. I haven't used avatars since the beginning. Like, I went, 10 years without one?
Damn.
And then finally I thought, maybe I'll try that. Yeah. But yeah, please reach out to me anytime. If you're on the forum, if you want to chat, if you're in the area and want to get together, if you have any questions about anything Ironheart, I know a lot of stuff about that just from being around the forum for such a long time. I have all the abilities of being a moderator without any of the desires, so of responsibility or additional work. So I, you know, I chat with the mods all the time and just kind of talk to them, and sometimes they reach out to me, and we just kind of... I have no desire in doing anything like that formally, but yeah, I'm always around and I love talking to people in the forum, and I have a thread for our adventure that we took. It was called Matt's Airstream Adventure.
Yeah.
And though I wasn't participating in the forum for a while I was saving and selling and working 12 hours a day, before we left, I kind of reached out to Giles and said, do you think it would be okay if I dedicated a forum thread to, you know, this trip we're going on, because we're going to be doing it indefinitely. And I think it would make for some great photos and just kind of photo documenting our journey. And he was like, absolutely, I'd be offended if you didn't. And it's a great thread. I mean, there's a lot of great pictures. We had a lot of great adventures. You know, I cover burying a turkey in a underground in a fire pit on Thanksgiving to make our dinner. You know, everything, all the cool, you know, we did a lot of national parks, state parks, stuff like that. So it's now called Matt's New Mexico, parentheses, formerly Airstream Adventure. And if you want to dig into that, I think it's kind of a cool read. It's got a lot of really cool pictures from all over the country in it. Yeah, hit me up.
Nice. I'll put a link in the description to that one, Matt, anyway, so then they can find you as well if they want to follow you on the forum. And you are you on Instagram, Facebook?
I am on Instagram, but I kind of have it locked down. Just because I'm not on Facebook. I've never been on Facebook because Facebook to me just seems like a place where people that you went to high school with can find you. And I don't want that. So yeah, I stay off of that. And Instagram, kind of the same thing. This year I kind of started posting some pictures and I have my site locked up kind of tight. But every once in a while I entertain the idea of getting in there. I think my Instagram name is MFR721.
Okay.
It used to be MFR, which are my initials, and it's a really great Instagram name, MFR. But Katie took it for something and changed it to something else for something she was doing, and without telling me. And when she went to change it back, MFR wasn't available anymore. So
no.
I know, right? It was great. MFR721 on Instagram. If you want to follow me or be my friend or DM me, feel free to do that. If I didn't go to high school with you, I will accept.
Without exception.
Right. Oh, yeah. And check back on the forum post Hamburg 23 trip. And I have no doubt that I will be all over that because I'm really looking forward to that. I'm sure there'll be tons of pictures.
Amazing. Dude, great talking to you as always.
So much fun, man. Thank you so much for inviting me. I didn't know why, because I couldn't possibly imagine what I would have to contribute to a podcast with so many great episodes in it. If I mean, honestly, skip over this one and go right to whatever, Haraki or something like that, because I don't care. So I don't expect any of you to either. But if you do, enjoy.
You're the best, dude.
I love you, Ollie. Thank you so much, man. It was great talking
love you,
to
man.
You. Don't be a stranger, okay?
You've been listening to Ironcast, the official Ironheart International podcast. A big thank you to Matt Raspa. Ironcast is an island-to-island production in association with High Kick Media, hosted and edited by me, Ollie Walker. We hope you enjoyed listening, and we look forward to dropping episode 9 very soon. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Take care.